Right.
On your agenda.
Right, right, right. I'll put it in wherever I want to. House will come to order. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is March 1, 2016, the 17th day of the session. Today is the last day for second reading in the second house. Tomorrow is the last day for third reading in the second house. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen, Baker, Baldwin, Barlow, Berger, Blackburn, Blake, Burkhart, Bird, Campbell, Kennedy, Clem, Connolly, Dayton, Edmonds, Edwards, Edwards, Eklund, Eklund, Escobel, Freeman, Gay, Greer, Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Yagi, Yagi, Jennings, Kasparic, Kinner, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson Lloyd, Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Nicholas, Northrup, Paxton, Pelkey, Petroff, Piperinen, Pinnell, Reeder, Schwartz, Summers, Steinmetz, Stubson, Throne, Walters, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker.
Here.
60 present.
The prayer of the day is offered today by our own Representative Mary Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. About 10 days into the session, I'm sometimes a little slow. I discovered the break room and where I could make my favorite coffee. But I also found this poem. And before I do a brief prayer, I want to read this poem because it's kind of hidden back there in the break room and maybe we've forgotten it. The True Infrastructure of the Legislature, by our own Sue Wallace. And I gotta stop doing these things if I can't do it without crying. Anyway, in this Wyoming legislature, each of us, we are an institution true, but a human one. Our camaraderie burnished, seared, in a crucible of robust, vigorous debate. Sometimes in concert, often opposed, decorum religiously observed, regardless. Emotions honed, constrained by civility, an integrity that transcends ordinary, a session, 40 days of intimacy more familial than adversarial. We know each other's idiosyncrasies, who we trust, who to keep at arm's length. And then my favorite paragraph in the poem. Know for sure that if some worst thing occurs, we could count on any one of these 90 souls to leap illusory aisles, vault partisan divides, abandon the haughty chambers to come to aid of a member in need. These relationships ring down through history, generations girding the foundation that supports a formidable state, a mighty nation. Some say it is all because of a strong constitution, the free nation founded on principle. But I know it is due to nothing more complex than respect and kindness between colleagues. Please bow your heads. Dear Lord Creator, we thank you for each other. We thank you for our disagreements, for our debate, for our collegiality. Please remind us all as we finish up our work that we are indeed colleagues, sent here to serve not our own egos, not our own agendas, but to serve the people and to serve you. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, folks, this is the time of one of my highlights of every year, of every session, is to get to welcome back to the chamber and introduce to some of you who may not have met him, my predecessor from House District 2 from Lusk, Wyoming, Mr. Ross Dirks. And if we can get it out of him, Representative Blake and I might be able to get him to say a few words. So
it's a privilege, Representative Dirks, to hear that voice again. I can't wait. I always enjoy it.
Requesting privilege of the floor.
Yes, please proceed.
Mr. Speaker and members of the House, this is my first time in this chamber, and I just really admire what you're going through because, as you know, in the House chambers, one could let one's emotions just rise, and just sort of filter out in that ether up there. And now here you've got about 6 feet of rising, and then it's stuck. And so no doubt the emotions have been more intense, and I could just feel how that would be, and I know you've had a tough couple of days. And I know you're facing some criticism both externally and internally over what you're doing with the Capitol building. But you know what? Home is always home, even if you don't live there anymore. And I'm here to thank you very much for the sacrifice you're going through to keep our home as upstanding as possible. So, members of the Wyoming Legislature, thank you very much for what you're doing.
Representative Kinner.
Privilege of the floor, please.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Well, that was a great segue into what I wanted to mention to the whole group. Fellow members of the 63rd, as you know, being the new guy, I haven't had a chance to be in the Capitol. So I've been following the project with great anticipation. Well, this morning, I went and sat in on the presentation about the Capitol, and that told me an awful lot about the project. And so it made such an impact on me in realizing that I'm just a new guy. But I wanted to learn about that great building that we have down there and about the work that's going to take place. So I just wanted to encourage all of you to try to take advantage of those presentations either at noon or at the end of the session today. And then as I understand it, tomorrow or Thursday there's going to be some tours. And so I for one plan to go because I want to see what's going on. And I'm hopeful that I'll be back in this body long enough to move back down to the Capitol. So I'll encourage you to all take part in those presentations. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And I want to reiterate that. That presentation is being put on by a member of the team that we finally got together when we finally stopped the wheel spinning and got this thing in gear and got it moving forward. And I wish everyone here would go listen to that presentation because the briefing is excellent. It gives you a feel for the individuals who are running this thing for us, and I really think it's something that all of us need to educate ourselves on. Now, Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Yes, please.
Members, one of our own has a birthday today, and he's, I think, 49 and holding. He looks older than that, but Michael, if you'd stand up, we have... We have our own Representative Blake and our former Representative Dirks has got quite a voice. We really miss his talent in many ways, but they'll lead us in a rendition. So, yeah.
Representative Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please.
Want to turn your attention back to the fishbowl back there. We have a group of students from the Cathedral Home north of Laramie visiting, and they're here to learn about the process of government, and so I'd urge you all to be on your best behavior. But our guests, if you folks could stand up so we could greet you.
Let's have the Journal Committee report, please.
Your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 29, 2016 has been read and recommends that it be approved, signed by Representative Schwartz and Steinmetz.
The doctor of the day is John Healy from Cheyenne. Please welcome him to the House. We're on that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 6. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 6 from Senator Ross, an act relating to the judiciary.
Senate File 6 having been read two separate times, the question is shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 14 from Education, an act relating to education.
Senate File 14 having been read two separate times, the question is shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections. Where's the amendment? Okay, there is an amendment. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members, this just deletes the Section 1 from the bill. And I asked yesterday, and I've contacted administrators and folks who are working this area, and I asked yesterday, what problem are we trying to solve? And I never got an answer, and I'm still kind of waiting to kind of find out what we're trying to do with Section 1. And I think, in the end, I think our school boards, our administrators, I think they get hired to do a job, folks get elected to do a job, and I think you let them work. And I guess I haven't heard of any problems or anything out there. And Section 2, as I said yesterday, fair enough. We've had that discussion probably for the last 6 years. So I welcome the discussion.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, I'd ask the legislative body to kick this one back. There are issues here, and what we're trying to do is to protect that private data that exists. This is 2016. Those different accounts exist on numerous levels, and to say that there's not a problem, maybe in some school districts there isn't a problem. Maybe in some school districts it exists where some of these kids' privacy isn't being invaded. But it's starting to become a problem in certain instances. There's a lot to be said about at a school system where we teach these kids about the Bill of Rights, and for us to say remember this is important, and yet at the same time, well, not when you enter this building, and that's a big dichotomy, and I would ask the members of the legislature to remember that when you're thinking about where you're voting on this, on and against.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for their second time? Representative Throne for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have really worked this first section a lot, and I think before we throw in the towel, we should step back. School districts do not have unfettered authority to search phones under the Constitution. They have broader authority than police, but they do not have unfettered authority to search somebody's cell phone. They have to have reasonable suspicion, and the search has to be related to the reasonable suspicion before they can go into a cell phone. And right now we have nothing in statute that guides our school districts. This puts bumpers on, it gives people guidance, it ensures that not just students' privacy, but everybody in their orbit that is found in their phone is also protected from an invasion of their privacy. At the same time, it preserves the district's rights to investigate what they need to investigate and preserves the tools that they can legitimately use. So on and against the amendment.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd urge you to support this amendment. In committee, we put numerous amendments onto this section, trying to straighten it out and make it decent. And it just needs to be rehashed again in committee. So I urge your support to on this committee, on this amendment, and let's get this section stripped out. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, you know, we have some good language in there already with the amendment that came yesterday. Administrators, teachers can still request to access a phone or a computer. I mean, think about this. You know, without this language in here, potentially what could happen is your son or your daughter could be called into the principal's office, and he sits you down at his computer or computer that's in that office, and without this language says you must log into your social media account, you must log into your email so that I can verify that such and such took place or didn't take place. Again, it's a violation of privacy. If your son or daughter does not, that there could be further consequences. You might be suspended from school. And so I think this is good. If a child refuses to do so, it's not saying that the child can't comply. But if a child refuses to do so, then mom and dad need to be called. And so I think this has some good protections. I would urge you to defeat this amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So if you turn to page 2 in your legislation, I want everybody to be sure that this is going to be going away. Do you feel that you have the right to compel a student or prospective student to add anyone to that student's or prospective student's list of contacts? Do we feel that we have that right to demand that they add someone, that they add a teacher, that they add someone of a position of authority to their a private group, a private data group? Do we feel that we have just cause to make a student or prospective student change their privacy settings on a private account? Do we have that right to compel? And that's the big question here. I do not believe we have the right to compel, nor do I believe that we should do those things. This bill covers the type of situations where imminent threat to a student could happen, as amended by the committee. And that's really the big horse that we're worried about here. It handles it. And I would ask you to vote against this amendment, please.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Chairman Horstman.
Oh, Mr. Speaker.
Oh, Madam Minority Floor Leader, excuse me, please.
So sorry, Mr. Speaker, thank you. Before we vote, I just wanted to do a better job of summarizing for you the Fourth Amendment standard. This was provided to me. I'm not reading directly from the cases. But first, it's sort of a two-part test, and it's broader than what the police can do. And nothing we're doing in this bill is really tying the hands of the school district beyond how they're frankly already tied. So first, a school has to have a credible, specific, and timely reason to believe that they will find evidence of wrongdoing or potential harm to self or others. And then second, They have to reasonably and specifically articulate the specific wrongdoing or potential harm. So there's got to be a timeliness element. So there's no harm in confiscating the phone and calling a parent. And if it's an imminent situation, an imminent threat, then there are other tools available. But really, you know, I want the school district to respect my children's rights even when they're accused of doing something wrong. And if they're doing something wrong, or certainly if they're threatening to harm themselves, I want to be contacted immediately. And I do not want a school district official poking around in my private life and their private life without contacting me. Against the amendment.
Representative Clem, for your second time.
Thank you, Mrs. Speaker. Just to wrap things up here, you know, this isn't for the good actors in education. This is for those rare occasions when you have a school official or someone that's going beyond the scope of really their power. And one of the things to think about is, you know, when we send our kids to public school, does that mean that they give up their right to privacy? And that's essentially what this bill is requiring. And again, I would just say that there are other ways to investigate some of these things. If there is bullying going on, and bullying was one of those things that have been mentioned, the victim of that bullying can go ahead and show the school administrator their email or their social media account, and they could see right there that, yes, so-and-so did that very thing. You don't have to take another child, your son or daughter, and have an administrator force them to open an account under threat of further sanctions. Furthermore, you know, if there is a specific threat to another person or to themselves, this doesn't prohibit the school administrator from acting. And of course, if you have a child who or if someone is accused of wanting to harm themselves or harm others, you would take that child. And there's protocols and procedures that go in place. I'm sure a school resource officer would be called. A parent would be called. There'd be further investigation. And it's not to say that at some point that a email or a social media account couldn't be opened up. But what this is saying is, at the very beginning, though, the school administrator or teacher, whoever it is, an officer, would not be able to compel or require a student to have their privacy violated. So, again, on and against the amendment.
Anyone else for the second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I brought the amendment because of our debate yesterday, and I still haven't got an answer to the question of what problem are we trying to fix. And I think these examples, and really the examples on page two, are all, I mean, I don't know, I guess you could probably have another paragraph what in case of meteorite hits. I mean, these things aren't going on, and I don't know how this bill of protecting students' data that we collect on transcripts and all that, all the Section 2 stuff, how it morphed into this Section 1, frankly. And so I still haven't heard what problem we're trying to fix. And I know when we debate, we try to make it personal and we say your child and your child's phone. And I mean, really, has this happened to any of your children? I mean, has anybody had their child say, hey, the principal took my cell phone and went through all my Facebook and all my text messages? I mean, has that really happened? It doesn't happen. And so you kind of go back 50 years ago when you'd write the old note, you know, and pass notes. And if your note was confiscated. And so we're in a different era now. And to put sidebars on the social media issue where most of this is taking place, there's some stuff going on out there that frankly, and I don't think any principal is going to lose any sleep. I mean, saying, okay, this is a sidebar on this, but the bottom line, they're hired to do a job. And to really take care of all our kids and protect our kids. So I hope you would agree, and I think the good chairman of education said it well. This won't go away. We'll come back and keep looking at this and give the committee more time to look at this before we rush into this. Really, I don't think there's any need to at this time. So on and for the amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate File 14. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All in favor, please rise. All opposed, please rise. Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 14 has failed. Senate File 14 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 18 from Senator Peterson, an act relating to capital construction.
Senate File 18 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next file for our consideration is Senate File 39. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 39 for Minerals, an act relating to prioritization of municipal solid waste facility cease and transfer projects.
Senate File 39 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 52. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 52 from Senator Driscoll, an act relating to state symbols.
Senate File 52 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 53.
Senate File 53 from Natural Resources, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act.
There is an amendment. Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to read second reading amendment number one to Senate File 52. Folks, I just wanted to give you a little, those that didn't know, those that have heard this, go through this a little bit. This is a large project funding. There's four projects in there, I believe. Two of them have conservation easements. And this amendment is talking strictly about those projects that have conservation easements. And I have some concern and always have had with conservation easements. My big concern is the state, well, the conservation easement is funded relatively 25% by the sponsoring, 25% by the state, and 50% by the federal government. So that's the way the conservation easements are funded. What happens is somebody contacts this group, and usually it's they're not going and looking. It's somebody that comes to them and says, what is the conservation, or can I have a conservation easement? And so it's agreed what's going on. With that land from that moment on into perpetuity, and that is the second thing that bothers me. If we could get them for 30 years or 50 years, I sure think that would be a better plan, but in perpetuity is just a long time. It's voluntary, so if you have a ranch, you decide, I'm going to have a conservation easement, and here are all the things that Excuse me, I just got a note that said I moved this to 52 instead of 53. Is that right? Okay. Can I move it to the right bill? 53. Okay, make that correction. Thank you for the input there. But the perpetuity, the landowner says, I will continue to operate my ranch with these conditions from now forever. And that's a willing thing. They just do it. And there are some benefits after you get through with that. If somebody has a $10 million easement on their place, they usually get back 20%, so they would give back $2 million. And with that $2 million, the tax breaks are pretty significant. So there is a big tax break. The landowner gets a large sum of money up front, and in exchange they give back usually 20%, and then there's some big tax breaks for that person. From then on, that ranch will be run whatever they decide at that moment. Now, what happens is usually land with an easement doesn't have the same value as land without an easement, so there's a little bit of county tax revenues that need to go or be considered. And from that moment on, the ranch will be run as in that condition. So I just wanted to give you that. I've got a handout that I can't show. I handed out in the ag meeting, but I do have that. I'm not sure perpetuity are really constitutional. That's another thing that I've heard about. And I just wanted to make you aware of conservation easements. The other two projects in the large project funding with the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust, I don't have a problem with those. So if there's any discussion to be had on there, I see the speaker. He and I have had these discussions over the years.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem, thank you. You know, as most of you know, I put a conservation easement on our place, and we sold that conservation easement and actually used money from the Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund to do so. And so just quickly on the idea of perpetuity. So the idea of perpetuity in conservation easements is basically we're selling our development rights in perpetuity. Perpetuity is a term created by a lawyer, and ultimately lawyers or judges will decide the fate of that into the future. But you can certainly be assured that if sometime in the future, if the nation needs that piece of land, eminent domain can still trump a conservation easement. So if it's ever really needed by society for something other than wildlife, then that will happen. You know, as it relates to the value of a conservation easement to the state, so why should we use state dollars to fund a conservation easement? Well, the fact is that the state's wildlife exists on these private properties. And if we don't take an opportunity to preserve some of that land for wildlife into the future, the state will not have that resource. It is gone. So it is a great opportunity by the state kicking in some dollars to preserve the wildlife they love. Now let's talk about recent endangered species issues. One of the factors, you know, if the sage grouse had been listed as an endangered species, I truly believe that mining, oil and gas, and ranching, as we know it in the state of Wyoming, would likely have changed drastically. One of the factors that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service looked at was how many conservation easements are on the landscape, and particularly, you know, on the landscape and sagebrush. And what Wyoming was able to demonstrate was that we have done a good job of preserving sage-grouse habitat in Wyoming, thus not we do not need to list the bird. So this is a great tool for the state of Wyoming to preserve its economy and to preserve its state resource of wildlife. So I would urge you to not support this amendment.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I'm not going to beat this horse too badly. We've been, I suspect many of you have heard this argument back and forth enough. But I heard some imaginative things out there, some mythical things that I just really need to talk about. 25% sponsor, 25% state, 50% fed. That's not always the case. There's every mixture in these of sponsors, of state, of fed. The feds are involved in some, they're not involved in others. Fundamentally, I think these are being driven by the Wildlife Trust Fund. And the Wildlife Trust Fund was put together for the purpose of wildlife. And it protects a lot of habitat in a lot of different ways. It cuts down Russian olive trees. It burns and reinvigorates willow patches. It does a lot of things. But it's all in the end about wildlife habitat. And what can be more germane to wildlife habitat than these conservation easements in the right place? And the conservation easement that was discussed is on a piece of land that would just tear your heart out if you saw it developed or if you saw anything else happen to it. And I just thank the previous person at the podium for his generosity to contribute that to a conservation easement and preserve that as habitat for wildlife and the viewshed and all the warmth that we feel when we see that piece of land in perpetuity. So I just wouldn't want you to accept the fact that there's some rigid formula. It's always 25% the sponsor, 25% this. Some of them are totally donated. I did one last year that you might have seen a big announcement about that was totally donated. And I did one this year over in that representative's part of the country that was totally donated. There's no funding in it of any sort except it was just donated. So let's be sure we understand that. Now, this issue of perpetuity, landowners do a lot of things to their land that are in perpetuity. It's not just conservation easements. For instance, they do development. They do pipelines. They do power lines. They do roads. They do windmills. And they do other rights of way, canals. All those are easements in perpetuity. How come there's no bugaboo about that, but when we get to a conservation easement being in perpetuity, it's some kind of a bad thing? All these things are done in perpetuity. They're easements. And the only significance of the perpetuity thing is that easement's an interest in real property. It's one of the sticks in the bundle that's being acquired. And so, yeah, it's in perpetuity. And then we raise this bugaboo about the constitutionality of it. Well, I think I can put that to rest with a deed. A deed is in perpetuity. A deed is a conveyance of the land. A deed is constitutional. We all own real property that we receive by virtue of a deed. It's in perpetuity. Our ownership is in perpetuity until we choose to divest ourselves of it. A conservation easement or a conveyance of an easement is the same thing. Now, I heard a lot of mythology about tax in that argument, and I just have to dispel that. And I don't know why there's this great resentment over some tax credit anyway, because it's a federal tax. There's no state income tax in the state of Wyoming. There's no tax credits in the state of Wyoming attributable to conservation easements. There are to federal income tax if one is in that particular tax bracket where they can take advantage of it. No doubt that is an incentive to some people to grant conservation easements. Those happen to be the people in many instances that have a lot of taxable income. The ones that have a lot of taxable income have a lot of property. They tend to go and buy this property that's of the greatest value to us, and it's a value to us as well as them. And so if the feds have created a tax incentive where some federal tax credits are available for doing this. What's it to us, one way or the other? And so and this business about $2 million and they get cash back, I just don't understand that. It is true that there are tax credits which might result in less tax in the future or less tax on the income tax form, but it's all at the federal level. So I can't understand why we would have any concern about that. Now, in the end, conservation easements are one of the most valuable things that we're doing. It's one of the greatest things that we're going to leave to our children and our grandchildren, future generations, is habitat for wildlife. And we just cannot continue, as we've seen, as some of you heard me speak one night when I got an award, we just, at some point, this habitat fragmentation just has to stop. You just cannot build a road, and there's actually a road over in the county of Carbon, or a mountain over in the county of Carbon, up in the north end of the county. There is a road to virtually everywhere in there, everywhere. And the habitat and the usefulness of that mountain is just about shot, because there's a road everywhere. And we continue to fragment this habitat. We build more roads, we build more developments, we do this, we do that, and the game just moves back and moves back, and that's where I got my name, Resting Elk. Okay? Tell me when an elk will ever come into this city right here where we sit and lay down and be able to relax again. It isn't going to happen. This city is in perpetuity. And so protecting habitat for elk or game, whatever it may be, in perpetuity is the only way to stop it. And if we don't stop habitat fragmentation, someday we're going to look around and we're not going to have any habitat left. And with the habitat goes the game and all the things that are associated with it. Hunting, fishing, outdoor recreation, view sheds, all the things that we love about Wyoming. So I think that conservation easements are a wonderful tool in many instances to stop that habitat fragmentation and to preserve some of what we all think Wyoming's about. Another thing I've noticed, it seems like these objections the conservation easements seem to come from people in areas of the state that have not been heavily impacted by development yet. And it seems as though the support for conservation easements comes more from those areas of the state where there has been impact. And so my county is a perfect example of that. And I did a conservation easement in my county for an old rancher who said, I don't want to see that happen. And I think it stopped this chop, chop, chop going north out of my city. That if you want to see the chop, 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 and you want to see the difference, then drive west of my city to the mountains. And you've got a highway that's subdivided and starting to develop on one side in what Dr. Knight at the university used to call one of the great geologic wonders of Wyoming. And now it's subdivided. On the other side of the road, that family has chosen not to subdivide it, and you can drive right down the road, and you can see this on the left, subdivision, no more habitat, divide, 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 fragment, fragment. On the other side, it's still there. And when I drive that road and I look at it, I just say, at some point, this has to stop. And I don't believe in taking people's property away from them or taking their real property rights away from them. That would be the other way to do it, just zone it. Say, just put a zone out there and say, as of this day, you're zoned and you can't do anything with your property. I don't think that's right. It's a property right that they have that they ought to be able to own and to do with as they will. And so if a program's created in which they feel that it's worthwhile for them to make a donation, or it's worthwhile because they get a tax credit, all the better. I think that's fair play. So I'm against the amendment, as I think you can tell, and would urge you to vote against it.
Representative Paxton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, ditto to the two previous speakers. You know, we are the cowboy state, and these conservation easements help us preserve our heritage. I don't think that we want to look like our neighbor to the south. You'll notice as soon as we cross the border, all the way almost to the New Mexico line, you see development on both sides of the road. How many tens of thousands of acres have been taken out of agricultural production along that line? And how much of our water that used to raise crops is now being used to flush toilets? On and against the amendment.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just a couple of things, and I would ask for a show of hands, but we're not supposed to do that in here. So how many of you live here because of the great symphonies in the state, or the opera, or those sorts of things? We live here because of the open spaces and our wildlife mainly, and that's why most of us are here. As the previous representative said, I remember a time when you could drive from here to the big city south of us, and until you actually kind of got to the city limits, there was nothing there. 30 years ago, there was a futurist who predicted that someday it would be a metropolis from this city to that city. And guess what? It's happening. We don't want the rest of the state to look like that. I remember driving south, and there's a hill, and all of you have seen it, where there's a cutout of a buffalo up on that hill, and there was a herd of elk resting on that hill. They were laying there watching the traffic go by. Do you think we'll see that again? We probably won't. So these conservation easements help protect that open space, the wildlife, and those things. And one of the representatives in this room who's given conservation easements, I've accessed them. He allows access to them. I didn't catch any fish, but it was still fun to do. Some of them, yes, the owners want to keep them off limits for a variety of reasons. It's their land. They have the right to do that. So I would remind you of those things before you vote on this amendment and ask you to vote no.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, fellow legislators, a little pushback to the last two or three speakers. This is my county. I've been here a long time. The elk herd is still there. They actually hunt that elk herd. As far as elk on my property, I've never had elk, but I have moose. Does that count? I have deer, I have antelope, and I've only got 5 acres. So,
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Well, actually, I'm a little confused here, because all the people have got up and spoke against this about we don't want more development, we don't want more businesses, we don't want more buildings here and there, yet these same individuals fund one of the organizations that we always say we're giving too much money to bring in new businesses. So I'm a little confused about that. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk. You know, the area of the state that I live in, my grandpa used to own the land that would be right in the middle of town now. He chose to sell it, which was his right. The property that was around that city, a few miles out in some cases, they chose to sell that property so that it would be developed minerally, and all of the rest of the state gets to benefit by that. I think it's the property right of the people that own the property to do what they want with their property, and nobody should be able to take that from them. If I could, I'd do away with property taxes so the state and the federal government wouldn't be able to steal it from them. But I cannot do that. But all in all on that, the state likes the money that is being raised by the minerals, but yet they don't want it to come in their area, and there could be a possibility, just like up in the very northeast part of Wyoming on a mountain up there, they found some rare earth minerals. Very pricey piece of property for somebody to get a hold of. Very important for this country and for our state. It would be a shame if that was locked up to where it would never be able to be produced. And I think it needs to be brought and left for the people that own the property, what they want to do with it. And I don't think I should have to help them to keep it that way. I think it ought to be their choice. They keep it and they want to keep it for ranching, they ought to be able to, but I shouldn't have to pay to help them do it. Thank you.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Up in my neck of the woods, we're still feeding the animals for free. And so on and for the amendment, one thing that the good co-chair that's been the ag co-chair for a long, long time has always said is that we are nationalizing our land. And that's an issue that I think we really need to think about as we look at these issues going into the future. Just like we have trouble with our BLM and our, some of the federal groups that we work with, I'm afraid we're putting ourselves in the same position here. So thank you on and for the amendment.
Representative Kinner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I wanted to just make a quick comment. It should take 15 seconds, I hope, for my good friend from the center of the state. And just as an example of what we're talking about, at one time I served as chairman of our economic development group in that place that I live up by those mountains to the north. But I also served on a local land trust board. And the reason that those went hand in hand was because it was all about balance. It was all about taking care of the property that we could and that we should take care of. And then it was all about making sure that we had room to grow and to expand and for development also and for economic stabilization. So really, I think what we're talking about here is balance. And they both can work and they can both help this remain a great state. So on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and for the amendment, you know, I've heard a lot of discussion of folks in here and constituents back home of why a certain presidential candidate gets a lot of play. He gets a lot of play because he's speaking the truth in a lot of areas that we're making bad decisions here and there. What these do, these are basically tax write-offs for the wealthy. These are basically tax write-offs for the wealthy, and people are upset about it. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. We have an outstanding attorney in this state who specializes in water issues predominantly, and she writes, what we have is a situation that as government acquisition and regulatory restrictions on land use have become prohibitively costly and effective, the government has looked to conservation easements as an effective and less expensive method for controlling lands without having outright government ownerships. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just a couple of things. I'm against this amendment, and just a couple of things have been said I think need to be cleared up. One is a mineral estate is dominant. These easements do not affect the mineral rights unless the owner owns those mineral rights. So you need to understand that. Okay. The second thing is, and you know, this is a tool I'm familiar with in my day job, is that most of the people that I work with these are not wealthy. They're using these as a tool that they have right now to be able to do, to continue in agriculture. They're using it as a tool to be able to survive into the future. And so it's just one of many tools that are available to them. And it's a tool that you have because of the permanent nature of it for the perpetuity that we're discussing that you need to know and enter into with clear forethought. But I have seen these conservation easements prevent land from getting broken up so it cannot be used for agricultural land, where it gets broken up into ranchettes. And I've seen it allow families to continue for another generation in agriculture. And so I just want to say, I just want to make that clear to everyone.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you. I will sort of tag on to Representative Greer just said. You know, I've talked to some of these people, and it's interesting. Most of them in their later ages in life. Children have left home, and they're looking at their land and thinking, all right, what do I have for retirement? What am I going to do? I can't run the ranch anymore. Do I break it up into subdivisions and sell it? And then the chance comes along to put it into a conservation easement. And they take that chance simply because they want to preserve the land. They want to leave a heritage for their children. And to them, it's like their retirement. That's what they have left to work on. What retirement does a rancher have? His land. And so many of them work upon that premises. And so as they enter into those conservation easements, I kind of admire them because, you know, they're trying to put that in perpetuity for their children, for their grandchildren, for the people around them, the people they know. It's a great program, and I hope we continue to run it on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro tem, on and against the amendment. And I, listening to the debate, I wonder why I keep hearing two different things. When we were talking about the two sections of school trust land that we had in our national park that the state was talking about selling, everybody wanted to preserve that. And is that because it was in a national park, or would it put a black eye on the state if we sold it to the highest bidder and someone went in there and developed on that land? Well, this is the same thing. It just happens to be on someone's private land. And I think it's a good way to preserve Wyoming, that, you know, the things that we grew up doing with our fathers, that we can do with our grandchildren, and they can do with their grandchildren. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For me, the issue here is whether or not the state should be a partial holder of these conservation easements. If it's such a good project, and I actually commend this process of preserving these open spaces, I don't have a problem with that. And it is a free market decision based on property rights and all those things. But for me, the question is, should the state pony up some of the money to have a partial interest in that conservation easement? What protection do we have in that regard going forward? The better way to do this, in my opinion, is for Congress to overturn the death tax and quit forcing these families to sell and subdivide these ranches so that they can pay the inheritance taxes. So the goal is laudable, it's worthy, it helps wildlife, it helps open spaces, it helps water and everything. Not a problem there. But as our minerals, access to minerals goes down, oftentimes partially lobbied by the groups that love these conservation easements, I might add, as those access to those minerals go down, that's the money that we pay for these conservation easements with. So we need to find a balance there so that we can continue to mine these resources that we have to be able to afford things like conservation easements. But again, my point is this. Let's either go 100% or let's go 0%. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Against this amendment for the bill. And one thing I didn't hear was something that they've found recently is migration corridors. Some of these easements keep those corridors open. And if you love your wildlife here in Wyoming, other industries are faltering right now. I'm sure they're going to come back, hopefully. Tourism, they come to Wyoming to see all of our wildlife. We don't keep those corridors open. We don't stop subdividing all this land. What are we going to do with our wildlife? Where is it going to go? Is it all going to disappear? Are they going to come to Wyoming to see no open lands? So against this amendment, let's keep our migration corridors open. Let's keep our land open. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? For their second time? Representative Summers.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, thank you. You know, just as somebody that's done this, you know, I think it might be instructive to the body what my family chose to do with this money. My sister was never married, never had children. My wife and I have never had children. So what we used this money to do is bring in another kid into our family, another child in agriculture. And it's a way we can pass that down in agriculture. So it's not just about feathering the nest of rich landowners. And ultimately, what you have to think about on this issue is, are we spending state dollars consistent with the Natural Resource Trust Fund? And that's written right in the Natural Resource Trust Fund rules or statutes, that yes, it is. And do we want to preserve wildlife habitat where it makes sense? We are always going to have places we need to develop. That's absolutely true. But we also, if we want to preserve this wildlife, the state's resource and our economic opportunities for that resource, we need to preserve pieces of land, and that involves the use of conservation easements. I stand on and against this amendment.
Anyone else for their second time? Mr. Speaker.
Just a couple of things. I'm not going to beat this horse to death. These things are not anti-business any more than deeding property for any other purpose is anti-business. It's interesting to me, however, if you take a look at the big project up in the middle of the state, the big project down west of my town, and the big project over in the eastern side of the state, it's interesting, they're all three owned by the same outfit, and as is typical in these rural subdivisions, it's an out-of-state company. And I don't, very seldom do I see an in-state entrepreneur in this state doing these subdivisions. Almost always, it's people that come in from the outside and buy this land, break it up, take the money and leave. Now, the property right thing. What about minerals? If I create a nonprofit corporation and I say the purpose of this nonprofit corporation, which I file with the federal government under 501c3, the purpose of this nonprofit corporation is to hold minerals in perpetuity so they can never be developed. Okay? And then I make myself available to landowners to say, you can convey your minerals to me and know that they'll never be developed. Now, are we going to put a stop to that? Are we going to say that landowner can't convey those minerals? And we see minerals split every way on these sales. We see them retained by the buyer, conveyed to the owner, conveyed to other people, all kinds of things go on. These conservation easements are no different. And I don't see why the notion of conveying a conservation easement is so antithetical when at the same time the conveyance of minerals, which is the same thing, is well accepted in the state. Now, I heard a little mention about the death tax. You know, the federal exemption in its index, it's actually more than that. I was going to say it's $5 million for a husband, $5 million for a wife, $10 million for a couple. It's actually indexed up this year. I think it's about, it's pushing $10.5 million. That first $10.5 million is exempt from federal tax. It's exempt from what's called the death tax. So, and I think there's an awful lot of ranches in this state that could be subdivided, parcels of property that could be subdivided, that where the owners of that property don't have that kind of net worth. So the death tax does not have a lot to do with it. So I would urge you to think about the future of this state, the long-term way that we want to see this state developed. And the default is subdivide, subdivide, fragment, fragment, roads here, roads everywhere. That's the default. And that default is being exploited by out of state people, which I just think is wrong. And I think it's well within the purview of the Wildlife Trust Fund to fund these if it's appropriate. Some of them are donated. There's no state funding. There's no federal funding. There's no anything. People just do it. Admittedly, there's a federal tax incentive. But again, as I say, what's that to us? So on and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their second time? Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Again, on and for the amendment, again, the wealth in Wyoming, the natural beauty, we're all here for that. But, Wyoming works off of what's underneath the surface. And, to say that these conservation easements don't impact that is just not true. Where the mineral estate is owned by the surface estate, yeah, they can do whatever they want with it. But where it's subdivided to where the feds retain the mineral estate, but it's private surface estate, which is a lot, millions and millions of acres of land in Wyoming, when you put a conservation easement on the surface estate and you have a federal minerals underneath, I ask you, try to go permit something on that. The regulators, especially the federal regulators, actually look at that and will make comments in their documents about these conservation easements. So it does have an impact. And again, those of you who have been here a few years have heard me many, many times that this is slowly, drip by drip by drip, on track to where we're not going to have these mineral taxes much longer. And we're seeing the impact of that right now. But, I don't know what you want to replace it with, but I think the writing's pretty clear down the road if we're going to support the type of state government we have.
Anyone else for the second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I certainly did not anticipate all the comments that were there. I love Wyoming, and I moved here from a neighboring state because of the wide open spaces, because of what's here, the outdoors, the hunting, the fishing. I just love that like nothing. That's why I'm here. And private property rights, there isn't anything more valuable to me. One of the first bills that I wanted to do was provide access to public land. But to do that, the landlocked sections that I wanted to hunt on, I had to take private property rights away, and I just couldn't do it. So those lands remain landlocked. So the private property rights, whatever the owner wants to do, I respect to the utmost. I don't mind that at all. And if whatever that rancher wants to do, I think that's his prerogative. I'm a little bit confused with the opposing comments I hear. We've got to have these conservation easements, and that's the rancher's right. I agree. The rancher's going to make money on doing this. Make no mistake about that. The one that I talked about, $10 million, the rancher got $8 million of that to put his land in a conservation easement. That was his choice. The first thing I said was, I don't want state money being put into these. I just don't think that's what the state needs to be doing. Let the rancher do it. Let the sponsoring agent. And this should scare you, but evidently it doesn't scare you, that the federal government owns the biggest portion of that conservation easement. According to the conditions that were set up by the private rancher, he set them up, and whatever he set up at that time, that's what's going to happen in perpetuity. It doesn't matter if the land changes. We have different oil exploration practices. We have different land practices. What he set up today is there, and any change has to be gone through the entities that own that conservation easement. So I'm a little bit confused saying, We want the conservation easement. That's his right. And we don't want subdivision all over the state. That is also his right. And you're saying conservation easements, that's his right, but it's not his right if he wants to subdivide, do whatever he wants to do. And the idea that here we are giving money with the business council, with the large project funding, that's to get people to come in. Where are they going to come into? They're going to come in to private land, and they're going to develop it. So here we are saying we can't develop because we got to have the conservation easement, but then we're paying people to come in and develop, and they got to live somewhere. So I'm a little bit confused with that correlation. I would love, and if we could get everybody that wants to do a conservation easement to donate it, that's the way to do it. That would take all the heartburn out of it. Do you know how many people would do conservation easements if it was only donated? Not many. So, I don't know. I'm a little confused with that one also. And, well, there's a lot more to say. Well, just, I wanted the main thing to bring this amendment was to make you aware of what a conservation easement is, and we can continue to do what you want. I brought the amendment to stop conservation easements. I think that's the best thing to do. If you'd like to keep conservation easements going, just vote the bill down and they'll keep it going. But it was a good discussion to have. So I'd appreciate you looking at both sides of the issues and voting the way you think is the best thing to do. Thank you.
We are on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 53. All in favor signify by saying aye. All opposed, no?
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 53 has failed. Senate File 53 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 58. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 58 from Labor, an act relating to hospitalization and treatment of mentally ill persons.
There is an amendment. Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 58 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, I know it was late in the day yesterday when we started talking about Senate File 58, and I warned you that there would be a significant amendment coming forth, and you have it before you, 4 pages. But I want to urge you to consider my other encouragement to you was this was actually putting in place what we did in the first Standing Committee amendment. And what we did in that amendment was we directed the department to designate the gatekeeper. Currently, it's permissive language for the county, Board of County Commissioners. And what we did was we said, the department shall do this. Now, in this amendment, we soften that to say may, because we can't ramp up that fast. We can't get 23 counties going at the same time. So we're basically giving the opportunity for the department to ramp this program up. But I will just walk you quickly through this amendment, pointing out what we're doing. Obviously, there's a bunch of technical stuff on the top part of the first page. The next page is, or the bottom part of that page is just cleaning up language. In the bill, we have no definition of facilities, so we're using providers as instead of facilities, we're using providers because we're going to define that. So that's a couple of changes. There are no persons in this bill. There are patients. You can see that as at page 10, line 3. You keep going through. There were some things that were taken out of the bill because they did not need to change, so reverting back to standard language. When you get to page 2, this is inserting gatekeeper in throughout the 109 and 110 statutes. And because, and what we're trying to do is get somebody to coordinate the care throughout this entire process so that we have both efficient and effective care. So that's all of page two, is basically inserting gatekeeper into the statutes, the other applicable places. And that has to do with both the county attorney's role in this and the court's role in this. Because I want to be clear, folks, this has both a legal side and a healthcare side. We are doing two things with Title 25. Go to page three, you'll see a lot of verbiage, but all we're doing is inserting gatekeeper. You'll see line 4 through 16. On 7, any gatekeeper. The next section below, 36 through 38, is getting the gatekeeper involved. And then when you go down to the bottom of the page, again, it's gatekeeper. There is one, let's see, keep going. Now on page 4. So the top of page 4, lines 4 through 10, this is a very specific change that was brought to our by our good chairman of appropriations. And this was a concern that, ladies and gentlemen, what we're doing with a Title 25 is we're taking somebody's liberty. And then we take their liberty, we send them to treatment, et cetera, and then we send them a bill. So what this is doing is saying, you can, if they have insurance, and they have, there's some public means that they are have available to them, that's acceptable. But not to send them a bill for something that they did not, they are not volunteering for this. Their liberties are being limited, and they're going into this. So what this does is it strikes out from patient, leaves the health insurance and government benefit programs on, and then there's another deletion, which is on the bottom of the page, and that is the, sorry, there should be another deletion. I'll have to review where that deletion is. But there's another deletion that goes with that. And then probably the most important part of the bill is right here, and this is the gatekeeper. And, ladies and gentlemen, this is bringing in what a good representative from this city wanted to do with a House Bill 134, is make the gatekeeper an integral part of providing this health care so that we have a continuity of care, and these folks are actually getting the assistance they need and not recycling through the system. I think if you talk to any county attorney and mental health providers, what happens is they go through the system once and then they come back again because we do not establish a continuity of care. So this is entirely about that. So what you see is that what we're doing here is we're softening the language to May, but then we're saying what the gatekeeper is responsible for. And I would say that the monitoring and coordination of timely, efficient, and effective patient treatment, that's what we're trying to get to. So these folks get the assistance they need. They don't produce, they aren't continuing, having these continuing challenges, and they get the care that they are deserve, and the system is less burdened. So the last thing we do with this amendment is we make this effective immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, if we heard the budget talks, we talked about we're shooting toward $20 million over budget in this particular line item in the Department of Health's budget. We can't wait 4 months. We need to start trying to get some of these things under control now. So at $1 million a month, that was the cost, the last over budget, the last two months of the previous fiscal calendar year, $1 million per month. We're already $11 million over budget. So we have to get a handle on this. So if there are no questions on this, I would call for the question on second reading amendment number one, the House Bill 58, Senate File 58.
Representative Croker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not speaking against the bill, just a question, because I know from having looked at Title 25, there's a lot of issues with it, and we definitely need to make some changes. But my one thing I'd like to hear a little more about is how much time did the committee spend on this topic? Because it seems like a pretty significant amendment for a committee bill that was then amended in the Senate, then amended again in committee, and then now we're dealing with a pretty major committee of the whole amendment. So I'm not speaking against it. I guess I just want to hear how much discussion you had about this concept in the committee and how that ties in, and is this bill ready to go?
Representative Thorne, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We did discuss the gatekeeper concept a lot, and I think the kinks have been worked out with the concept, especially the way it's written in this amendment. We did have a lot of discussion as something that we should do. And when I say the committee, I'm referring to the Title 25 Task Force. And then it went through labor health. But we have discussed this concept a lot.
Representative Larson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to follow on behind, I would also tell the body that as the task force come to their conclusions, that they also reported back to the Labor Committee twice, and we had a significant discussion on the gatekeeper aspect and also the implications that would have on costs and the coordination between the legal side and the mental health side, and trying to divert some of those Title 25 placements to the facility, to the state hospital, and try to provide a little better care. So we had quite a robust discussion on a couple of occasions on this, and I think part of this amendment, some of this language, is a result of that discussion.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to give my support to the amendment, appreciate all the hard work that the member from the land of coal has brought to this. He really put in a lot of work, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on this amendment. Is there any protection for the gatekeeper as far as liability or anything like that? For instance, you know, if the gatekeeper recommends in court that a person be released and that person then goes out and commits a crime or takes his or her life, I'm just wondering if there's any is there sufficient protection for this gatekeeper that they're not held liable for anything that would come about the decisions they would make?
Representative Nicholas, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment, folks, you may recall earlier, it seems like a month ago, but about 10 days ago, we passed a gatekeeper pilot program that is now over on the other side of the body. And basically, what we did is we took that pilot project and combined it into this bill, which was a bill that came out through the for the task force. And I also served on the task force. And what we did is, well, why do the pilot? Let's just take this thing and through rule and regulation, we'll give the authority to the Department of Health to go and do it immediately and in order to facilitate for them and to get this thing up and running. And also to make it, at least at this stage, kind of a permissive and not mandatory, to see if we can't get this concept of the Title 25 under control without being overly dictatorial, but just trying to do it in the right way. And so essentially this takes that bill that we've already passed and wraps it into this bill. And it facilitates it because it started on the other side, and you can actually get there in the next 3 days, and whereas the other one may not see the light of day. So I'd move your support on that. And with regards to the liability, the gatekeeper, I'm just going by recollection, but it's appointed by the state and only makes recommendations. And those recommendations then, they're not binding. And the court will then be the ultimate arbiter of those recommendations. And so he's really not in harm's way. But if he is, I mean, obviously that's a problem that will be addressed in the rulemaking and how it goes through.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question on page 18 under 2510.112, subsection C. The county shall pay for the first 72 hours as provided in this subsection. Just wondering if that is currently how it is, and if you discuss that expense to the counties, that's something my county is definitely worried about. And if you could address that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'm going to start from the back and go forward on some of the questions. The county issue regarding the 72 hours, current statute, A, B, D, other places already has that 72-hour issue. What was occurring is there seemed to be a little loophole where some people would speed up the process and then start submitting the bills to the department inside that 72 hours. Now, the department was not compensating them for them, but they were having to deal with figuring out that cutoff, that 72 hours. So the 72 hours, that's just a reaffirmation of what's current practice. This is not changing that. This is just trying to reaffirm what is in other parts, which you don't see in the bill. I think that's A, B, and maybe E, and I apologize, I don't have the statute book. One of the fundamental questions was brought from the center of the state was regarding why isn't this in the original bill? So the task force took on three topics. It took on examined three topics. One, which is in the bill, is the directed outpatient commitment. That is an alternative treatment protocol that we are now providing to the courts. And that was the substance of this original bill that started in the Senate. The second topic that the committee, the task force, and subsequently the Labor Health Committee took on was the gatekeeping concept. And the gatekeeping concept, the agency that's responsible for this felt it needed to be tied to a payment reform, i.e. to the individuals that are out in the community that are providing mental health care with state dollars. So maybe we should take a step back, and fair enough, yesterday it was very quick. There's basically $160 million of mental health dollars flowing out of the state. Approximately 60 is going to centers within each of our communities to provide mental health services within each of our communities, community centers. 60 million approximately going, and this isn't going to add to the 160, but the money floats around a little bit, goes toward the state hospital. Right now we're about 10 million over. And then another 60 million, which is split between state and federal dollars, which is Medicaid dollars, of which some provides mental health care. So of that community dollars that's going out there, the agency responsible for this thought that they needed to tie the payment reform, how those dollars are utilized in the community, to the gatekeeping. And that understanding that balance was the challenge within the interim of how to tie those two together. However, everybody, the agency and the folks in the communities, believes that we need to take a first step in doing this is to take that coordination of care step. What is it? And that is a first step. Now, why is that a first step? The folks that actually have that continuity care in the communities that are utilizing this model, and there are a couple of communities that are utilizing this model, and there are a couple that are certainly are not, and that's where we're seeing our cost issues. They're seeing a 30 on the conservative side, and I guess you want to get more optimistic, 50% cost reduction. Couple that with the improved care that people are getting because they're not cycling through the system. They're not falling through the cracks. They're not going through the legal system multiple times. So when you consider the improvement of care and the reduction in the cycling through this legal and mental health system, the testimony from the communities that are doing this say it's a significant savings. And, folks, we need some savings, and we need improved health care. So I hope that addresses the one where why was this not included in the initial bill. It was three parts. We got one in the bill. We thought we figured out a way to get the second one in a meaningful way. The payment reform will be the continuing work of the task force if it's reassigned by Management Council or Labor Health, should that be assigned to Labor Health. So I think I've answered all the questions. If I haven't, somebody has a concern and wants to bring a third reading amendment to make me explain some more, I would be glad to. And there may be, and just to be fair to everyone, Mr. Speaker, there are counties that don't have facilities, don't have a place for this initial detention. So there may be an amendment coming, and I'm working on one of our colleagues to give some latitude to that 72-hour piece to allow for some transportation issues, because some folks are remote from where the care needs to be delivered. for the highest need patients. And folks, these are vulnerable people. They are in this. They are mentally ill. They are a danger to themselves or to others. This is serious stuff. And last year, or I think our numbers are on track. Well, last year our numbers were over 470 something. Don't quote me on the numbers, but we're seeing a steady increase. And in economic downturns, quite honestly, the mental health folks say we're probably going to see more. So, ask for your favorable consideration of this second reading amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate File 58. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 58 is passed. Senate File 58 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 60. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 60 from Labor, an act relating to public health and safety.
Senate File 60 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 61. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 61 from Labor, an act relating to labor and employment.
Senate File 61 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 68 from Appropriations, an act relating to administration of government.
There is an amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, before I recognize the bringer of the amendment, this is going to involve a substitute bill. It'll be brought as second reading amendment number one but that second reading amendment will consist of adopting a substitute bill, which will then take the place of the original bill. There are amendments subsequent that assume that the substitute bill is going to be adopted. So in the event that substitute bill were not adopted, those amendments will either be withdrawn or they'll be disallowed by the chair because they'd be irrelevant to the bill that's under consideration. So with that, understand second reading amendment number one that we're going to hear now is for the introduction of a substitute bill. It's on yellow paper, and it would take the place of the bill that's presently before you. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the explanation. I move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 68. As the Speaker said, it is a substitute bill, and it was spawned by what happened over the last few days on these amendments that came in, and they were subsequently split, and some of the splits passed, and some of the splits didn't pass. And I was sitting at my desk trying to track this stuff, and I agree. I couldn't figure out what was going on. There might have been some of you that couldn't figure it out either. So I brought up the topic of an engrolled bill, and the people who are paid to tell us these things said you can't amend an engrolled bill or engrolled bill. So he says they say the proper way to do this was a substitute bill. And when you see the language here, what they're talking about is deleting all of these committee bills. But rest assured, all of the things that we passed on first reading are already in this substitute bill. So when they say they deleted it, but inserted it in the substitute bill. Okay? Now, I've explained the reason, and of course, there are a number of amendments that are coming afterwards based on the substitute bill.
Chairman Harshman, for your first time.
Just one quick note, too. It says refers to the Piperine Amendment and the Stubson Amendment. That was actually the Greer Amendment. It said Greer on the amendment yesterday, but on our legis web, it said Stubson. So just so everybody's aware of that.
Anyone for their first time? Anyone for their second time? We're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate File 68, which is the adoption of the substitute bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one has passed. We are on the substitute bill. There are two amendments, at least one. There's two amendments to that. Representative Zwanitzer, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And there's probably only going to be one amendment because this amendment three I'm going to withdraw later. But on amendment, I would move second reading amendment number two to Senate File 68. And ladies and gentlemen, this takes place on all of page four and page five. And for those of you who are committee chairmen who were here when I was 4 or 5 years back, if you've read this, I assume you'll have the same heartburn I have. Those of you who are new to the body, we went through this process, I think, 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, where all the interim committees had to meet and meet with the state agencies, and we went over all of their budgets, and they came back, and we had to figure out how to cut up to 5%. We turned that in, which probably cost, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars for the time we all met in interim and had all of the agencies come meet with us and go through this process, turn that information over to appropriations, and they made some recommendations. I guess it's my personal belief that was kind of an epic fail on our part. We spent a lot of money, and I don't think it really worked in our best interests. So what this bill, as I read it now, it intends to do that entire process in 30 days, which I just think is completely unreasonable. So let me tell you how it works, and I'm sure I can get told I'm wrong if I'm wrong. But if you read the bill on page 1 and 2 and 3, the governor says, hey, there's a shortfall. If you look on page 3, Romanet 1, the governor notifies the chairman of appropriations, the management council, and the chairman of CREG, and the CREG has to meet. After that, I'm deleting everything on page 4 and 5, because right now what it says is the management council tells all the committees that we need to go out and meet with all of our agencies. We have to bring that information back to appropriations. They have to take that into consideration, and they have to make some recommendations to the gubernatorial office, and we have to do that somehow not more than 30 days after receiving notification. So I'm not exactly sure how management council is going to tell the committee chairman to get all the committees to meet within 2 weeks so we can get that information back to the appropriation committee in time to meet that 30-day statutory deadline. So what the amendment does is takes out that entire process. The process would then be the governor notifies Craig and appropriations. Craig meets, appropriations meets. Appropriations will probably meet with all the affected agencies anyway, and they still make their recommendations within 30 days after receiving that notification. I think it's a really good amendment. That's why I brought it. But I just think that from remembering the process we went through, I do think appropriations took into account what the committees did 5 years ago, but at the end of the day, appropriations has to make the hard decisions, and they're going to make those decisions in the best interest of the state, regardless of what the committees tell them. And so I'd be happy to answer any questions, but would ask you to vote in favor of the amendment.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask you to support this amendment. This is something that I've still got heartburn about a few years ago when we had to do that as department chairman. And here's what the problem is. You have, I think we had in my committee three or four different departments that were assigned to our committee, some of which we knew more about than others. And they would come in and give us these options, and we weren't really capable of judging, you know, which options are the best. It was and the thing that really bothered me even more is that there's 10 of us, well, actually 20 co-chairmen, but there's 10 standing committees, I believe. And I always had the worry of whether the protocol that we were using in my committee matched up what was happening in the other nine, and I think all the other departments did too. I just think that this is a, what he's taking out here in this amendment is a kind of a pretty much of a useless regimen that we had to go through, and I certainly wouldn't want to have it in statute.
Representative Nicholas, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for the bringer of the amendment. I guess I don't read into the language what was described. It looks to me like if you go to page 4, and I'm on the the new bill, and Romanet 2, says Management Council shall forward to the legislature and the proposals and recommendations of the governor and assign review of the proposals and recommendations to various standing committees of the legislature as the council deems appropriate. And I presume that's the only component of eliminating two pages of the bill that you're concerned with. And so, number one, my understanding is that's a discretionary thing based upon Management Council basically trying to find out, after assuming what these projected budget deficit shortfalls are, which affected standing committees could actually be of service or be useful and actually then provide a quick response to the JAC for what follows. So it's not asking you to convene a meeting or to get together that standing committee necessarily. It's putting them on notice. And then if they want anything from those standing committees, it gives them an opportunity to do it, albeit on short response. But then the remainder of it, and to me, if you want to do what you want to do, all you need to do is take out line 1 through 5 on page 4 and nothing else, because then the process of what the JAC does, one of the recommendations, would be the same. So I just got like some clarification on that, and so I can kind of, maybe I'm just not reading it right, appreciate it.
Representative Greer, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I understand the issue that's being brought forth by the people who are in support of the amendment. I'm opposed to the amendment because we did look at this when we reviewed this bill in committee. And really what we were looking at doing, much as when the body, our Speaker Pro Tem reached out to the body this summer, is, hey, you working on your interim committees know some of these agencies and departments better than anyone. You see them all year, and a lot of people have stayed on the same committees for a couple of years. And we're just trying to look at getting that feedback. You know, there may be something out there or a program that you as an interim committee, as a standing committee, realize needs to be modified, maybe needs to be eliminated. And that's all this process was, is, hey, this reach out to our chairman and say, is there something out there you're aware of that could be cut or changed or reduced or funded differently to help with the shortfall? Now, the chairman of revenue spoke in terms of the exercise that we went through, and I agree, but not completely. And I say this because I was on standing committee, on the minerals committee, and I actually picked up quite a bit of information about some of the budgeting and where the money went into various programs that were useful to me as they came back in later years. I'm like, wait a minute. Now, you said this 2 years ago when we were cutting this budget about your priority on it, and now you're changing that. That was useful information to me. So I agree that exercise and what we did not work very well. But that's not what this provision does. This provision is actually, I would think that all the committee chairs would welcome that, to say, hey, we're going to go and now ask you, is there something you're aware of that maybe we're not, that you've brought up in your committees? And if so, let us know so we can bring it into this shortfall in dealing with it. So I'm opposed to the amendment.
Representative Summers, for your first time.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I stand, on an ambivalent on the amendment to a degree. I kind of think this is putting lipstick on a stinky farm animal, and I don't know that it really changes the stinky farm animal. And I guess my concern, you know, perhaps this helps a little, but my concern still remains that the bill, I don't see the necessity of the bill. I think the Appropriations Committee were able to handle everything this year as necessary, and I just think it's pulling concentrating more power. So ambivalent on the amendment, maybe kind of like it, and against the bill.
Chairman Harshman, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On against the amendment, and I thought it was brought up on page 4, on if that was really the intent of the sponsor of the amendment, just delete those two sentences. But I'd say the good chairman of revenue who spoke, and we all were here and went through that exercise. As we worked this bill in committee, there was no intent that you would all of a sudden scramble and have these standing committees meet. What would more likely happen would be an email. Say, chairman of revenue, the chief executive is proposing in this budget shortfall time to reduce the property tax in the revenue department. What do you think of that? I mean, it'd be an idea to get input from committee chairmen and their committees. And that's really it's all that's contemplated there. In 30 days, you couldn't get people together. And who would want to spend the money in a shortfall time to do that anyway? But I think it's about group genius. You want to get more people involved in these discussions instead of two or three people right now. I was not consulted at all about diversions of the school foundation reserve account. I was not consulted at all about the diversion of a payment to the state health facilities account. I was not talked about to at all about cutting funding for drug courts. I mean, none of us were consulted on that. None of us were consulted about the size of the spend out of the LSRA. None of us dreamed that there'd be a $440 million, basically a quarter of the account asked for in this budget. I mean, it just wasn't even contemplated. And so then we see that, and we got the budget the same time you did, right, when it went to print and it hit the media. So this really sets the rules for the road. And so then the rest of these deletions, which I think are I would urge you not to support, are on page 4 of your substitute bill about contingent appropriations. We didn't put any in this budget bill. We've had $150 million in the last several budgets. And then about expenditure reductions, as I mentioned just a minute ago, and then the timeline. Maybe this is just a one-time blip in revenues. And then flip over to page 5, more of the deletions on C, D, and E. And, again, this is all what we studied in revenue and appropriations about our rainy day account. What is the policy? I mean, we've been criticized by everyone, by members on this floor. What's the policy? We ought to have a policy of when we're going to dip into it and how much. And that's what this bill tries to set out in statute. And so I'd really encourage you to say no to the amendment. And maybe there's other accounts you want to continue to look at that we could bring into this bill. I don't know. We've got the obvious ones, I think. The 1% is getting into another part of the bill. But if you can make this bill better. But I think this amendment really harms the bill and really harms what we're trying to set up a process where we're all kind of involved in this a little bit more, to at least share ideas before we read about it in the newspaper. So on and against.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, and I appreciate the concept and the idea that we don't want to have a bunch of standing committees getting together. But how many of you knew on January 1st that $190 million had been pulled out of various projects and used to cover the budget shortfalls, and where it came from or had anything to do with it? None of us. But this bill in concept in general is, I would say, it's the opposite of a power grab. It's saying when there is a severe budget shortfall, then there is a procedure that you follow, and that procedure is going to maximize the amount of information to the maximum amount of legislatures so we can all have input. You know, at the end of the day, after all this 30-day procedure is done, it still goes back into the chief executive's lap, and he decides what to do. So because we can't tell him. We can only make suggestions to him, but it educates us all. And it would just be nice to know where the money's coming from, actually what the shortfalls are going to be, and how he came up with those conclusions. So I appreciate the concept of limiting the standing committees. And, you know, and we don't want this to turn into like a GAZ-controlled thing either. That's kind of the whole point is let's do the groupthink. Let's let everybody know about it. Let's just for an example, there's a good chance, some say 50-50, that within 3 months from now, we're going to be in this situation. If there's a stock market crash, we're going to be in this situation again. So the question is, do we want to wait all the way until next January to be able to address it, or do we put a system in place where we can assist and control and make suggestions on where those government shortfalls and expenditures are going to come from? So like the idea, but against the amendment.
Anyone else for the second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Zwanitzer, Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. You know, and I do. I appreciate the thought and the intent, and although one of the other members referenced farm animals, you know, when you become a chairman, you start thinking about, you know, what it takes to put a committee bill together. And this is an interim committee bill, and even though I don't really like the bill, I'm going to try to make it better because that's what we sort of do in this body. But I really think this process is unworkable, and you all can read the language. I mean, I'll direct you to page 4, line 4, where it says, you assign review of the proposals and recommendations to various standing committees. Well, first you have to have proposals or recommendations, and it doesn't say to the chairman, it says to the standing committees. So I assume the process, and it's thinking about how this is going to work in the real world, you're going to tell the chairman, and of course your House and Senate chairman have to confer first, and then we have to tell everyone, we have to solicit input, and somehow we have to either ourselves or have LSO put that in some type of professional format to send to the Appropriations Committee, because on page 4, lines 16 through 18, it says the Joint Appropriations Committee shall consider any comments received from the Standing Committee. Not the chairman, the Standing Committee. But it doesn't say they have to act on them. So that's the other thing that kind of worries me, is I may go through this time and process and make all of my committee go through this time and process, and things could change and be even worse than 30 days. They could be better, they could be worse, things change. And so I may have gone through all this work, and Appropriations says, hey, the picture is totally different. We appreciate all the work you did, you know, getting all this together on 2 weeks' notice, but actually, yeah, the picture's changed, and so all of your recommendations, well, we're going to consider them, but it's different now, so we're going to act as we were going to act anyway. And I think on page 5, we all agree, Appropriations is going to do C, D, and E. They don't have to have statutory language to do these things. That's part of their job. And so I do appreciate the intent of the bill. I appreciate there's a process. I just think this process in 30 days is unworkable. And I didn't quite hear how it's going to work in the real world. So I'd ask you to take this out. It doesn't kill the bill. It, I think, takes some of the process. And I can appreciate the sentiment that you're trying to involve more and more of us in the decisions. But when push comes to shove, and if things really got this bad where the governor had to, you know, contact all the state agencies, if you read the rest of this bill and everybody's kind of on high alert, you don't need one more step in the process. It's going to, A, bother agencies they have to come meet, because that's what it says. A standing committee, I'm going to have to go check with all these agencies as well. And if you have a committee like mine that oversees a multitude of agencies, I can tell you the process we went through with just two of the statewide electeds, they already had bare-bones budgets, and we were having to cut the Constitution out of the Secretary of State's office. I mean, that's how bad it was to make some of these recommendations. And so just reading the language, I don't think it's currently workable. If this amendment doesn't pass, I may try to get on third reading something that we can all be you know, in together in a process. But I just, if you read the actual language, you're just opening up to a lot of problems, I guess, in my mind. And so I'd ask you to vote in favor of the amendment.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 68. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 2 has failed. We're on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 68. Chairman Zwanitzer, Dan.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move to withdraw second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 68.
Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 68 has been withdrawn. Senate File 68 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the 63rd, I don't know if you remember, you probably do, I had a legislative aide last year named Elijah Lowry, He was involved in a terrible crash last spring on I-25 just north of the state line. And he's had a very long and difficult recovery, but it's been miraculous, and we praise God for his recovery. He has walked in under his own power today, and he's looking good. So please stand and recognize him in the gallery. Elijah Lowry.
Joint Conference Committee on Senate File 65, Kirkbride, Chairman, Kinner, and Laux. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any committee announcements? Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Select Committee on Tribal Relations will meet at 1 o'clock in S-18 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet in 10 minutes in room H-38 for
Chairman
interim
Harvey.
Topics.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 10, Labor, will meet with the Light Committee in 15 minutes. In Jonah Room S-19 to discuss interim topics, and also your Joint Conference Committee on Senate File. Your Conference Committee on Senate File 45 will meet tomorrow morning 9 a.m. in Room H-37.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, your Select Committee on Legislative Technology and Process will meet upon adjournment in room S-19 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4 will meet jointly with the Senate in 15 minutes at the new 302 building, or 302 room. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanis, Sir Dan.
Your Joint Conference Committee on Senate File 42 will meet in 5 minutes in Senate 17.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Mr. Speaker, just a reminder to the body that a project briefing on the Capitol Square project will be held upon noon recess in Jonah Room L-51.
And Mr. Speaker, pro tem, there's one also this afternoon on adjournment. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, that is correct.
Okay, so I would hope that everyone could attend one or the other. You've heard the motion that we recess until 2 p.m. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're reaching.